Live from inside a giant bottle of Merlot, this is Austin Danger Podcast, now and forever, the only randomly curated Austin Powers podcast on the internet. I'm Kevin, as always. I'm joined by super producer extraordinaire Mackenzie Wilkes.
Yes, the tannins, I smell them. I don't know. Hi, hello.
This is, you know, Merlot.
I was trying to do a wine thing. I know nothing about wine.
This vintage is great. No root years here, or must have been a root year. I forget which direction that goes. Tonight, we explore the world of wine with Alexander Payne's Sideways. A movie that is not about wine at all, but we'll get into that whole thing. But first, I don't know, like, you know, this section of Austin Danger Podcast, listeners, is very perilous. This moment here in between.
This moment
there's a part
in time
of me.
We do
there's
a dance.
A part of me that wants to go right into the current events and talk about the Beetlejuice trailer. But I will say I did 25 minutes on it. In the pre-show you'll never hear. And my girlfriend's response was, could you please chill out? So you're not going to hear about that.
Damn.
Kenzo, I'll tell you what I want to hear as we kind of saunter from the intro into what we've been watching. I want to hear about your 2024 slate of films that you've been cooking up in an attempt to stay up to date on the year's movies.
Oh, like about that? The things like that I'm keeping my eyeballs out for, my little eyes.
I want to hear what you're looking. Listen, it's March 21st. We are now looking ahead at the rest of what is a bizarre and strike-affected year, if I've ever seen one. So I want to hear about what you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple things I'm looking forward to. We, you know, I did see Love Lies Bleeding, which we can talk about. Also, me and Ian talked about it a bit on Criterion Connection this morning. And so you and I can talk about. We all saw all three of this little tripod of co-hosts on McKinzo Monday. We all saw it and we all loved it. So that got me really excited and jazzed to just keep looking forward. I mean, my number one most hype movie is I Saw the TV Glow. I've watched that trailer a million times. Cannot wait to see that movie. Just seems like it will be so deeply my shit. Obviously, my eyes are peeled for Didi, Sean Wong's debut. I don't think it's his debut feature. I think it might be his first narrative feature. I think he's done some documentary feature stuff, but this is actually being released in a theater, so I'm excited to see that. Didi, Joan Chen is in it, apparently, and like Queen.
Ooh.
Fall Guy looks really fun.
Fall Guy does look really fun.
There were doubters, and now everyone's down for it because it got good reviews, but I was never doubting. I was never doubting.
The doubters are weeping in the comments over Beetlejuice 2 right now, right? So who are they?
You know, we've talked about People's Joker. I'm really pumped about Sing Sing. That trailer made me cry. Oh boy, Coleman Domingo, best actor. Let's go. Mother Mary, which is a movie I'm not convinced is actually coming out this year, but I would like to see it, please.
What is that?
It's the new David Lowery with like Anne Hathaway and Michaela Cole.
Oh, yeah.
Ian was telling me that David Lowery and the Blank Check Boys are friends, which blew my mind.
Yeah, yeah. He's a regular guest.
Apparently Griffin has seen Mother Mary and said on the Patreon that it's really fucking good. And I'm like, when are we going to see it then?
Whoa.
Gosh, I feel like those are my big ones. I mean, you and I were jokingly talking about Megalopolis and like if it's going to be the disaster of a lifetime or the masterpiece of a lifetime.
If you run a movie podcast and you're not looking at Megalopolis, you are behind the curve, my friend.
Do we have any links to Megalopolis?
We will. We'll find a way.
We'll find a way.
We will cover Megalopolis on the show. or I'll tank the format. We will cover it one way or the other. Yeah. Megalopolis. Yeah. I am so intrigued. I will believe that movie is coming out 9 years after I see it. I do not believe we will ever see this film.
I just saw that new picture of Adam Driver that got released for it. That's it's like the poster on Letterboxd now, and I was like, "What the hell is this?" Yeah, it's like he has kind of like a Caesar cut haircut and like a weird suit on.
Oh my god, this movie is going to be incredible! What am I looking at?
Everyone, if you go to the Letterboxd, it's the poster on Letterboxd is this outfit that Adam Driver is in.
It looked good on the Saltburn guy.
Oh, yeah, but I mean,
brave move.
there's a lot of things on my list. I think, and I will not lie. Part of this is also just Austin's prep. I want to go crazy at the Austins. It's going to be great. But yeah, I mean, I watched Love Lies Bleeding though. That's something I have watched from 2024.
Yeah,
obviously it's skyrocketed to the top of my ranked list. I don't know what's going to beat that movie for me. Cause it's so, you know, I said this to Ian, like it's so deeply my shit in every way. It is an echo of Bound meets Lost Highway meets Blood Simple. It's gay as hell. It's absolutely crazy. It goes magical realism in the end, and it just skyrockets to the moon for me. But yeah, I fucking loved it. Kev, you also really dug it, I think, when you saw it.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been loving movies most of my life, and that's a long ass time, okay? Back when the Criterion Collection put out expensive DVDs you couldn't afford, but you can look at them at the mall. You know what I mean? And so as a result, I'm pretty fucking tired. And I know that my favorite thing in the world to do every week is do a podcast with the host of the eventually returning podcast on Lynch. So I say this with love and respect towards anyone who talks about David Lynch. I am generally very tired of talking about or hearing about David Lynch. And that is because usually I feel like people are very reductive about his actual themes and what he's interested in talking about. They think it's the 50s was bad and the nuclear bomb was bad and the Northwest is a little creepy. That's generally when someone describes something as Lynchian, generally it's like, oh, suburbia has like a bad guy in it.
Without this is kinda any weird.
Of the, yeah, like, or it's kind of weird, or the forest is scary. They'll call it Lynchian. And diluting the whole thing. This Love Lies Bleeding is one of the few actually Lynchian movies I've ever seen.
It gave me so much of Lost Highway. Like, it was very Lost Highway-y to me in terms of that also, type of Lynch, that brand of him.
The sexiness, the sometimes kind of brashness of it, also rang some Wild at Heart for me as well.
Ooh, yes.
The
awfulness
of the antagonist, not on the level of, well, pretty close to the Willem Dafoe character in Wild at Heart.
Or the Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet. Like, I feel like Ed Harris could easily fit into being a Lynch villain for sure.
So it has all these influences and is, I think, sufficiently, for my pretentious ass, Lynchian. But it's also doing all this new original stuff, and not just because it's a gay movie about two women, but it's also like bridging these really fascinating worlds that we don't usually see. The bodybuilding competition that kind of centers the timeline of the film. There's some shock gore that, again, is very Lynchian. And then the ending, which I will not spoil, but a huge risk is taken, the kinds of which, like,
we love. Kind of, I feel like that's so...
We love, and we loved this, without getting into it, we love this, but also that, like, you wouldn't see generally unless it was the whole movie, right? So to point to recent ADP history, think about Beau is Afraid from last year, which made the weird move the whole movie. So then when it went really weird in the third act, you know, I think it dissolved my whole point. But the point is, generally, when a movie is this gets this weird like this, it's been weird the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I just found it all so refreshing. Kristen Stewart is great. But
she's
then this,
so good.
This, like, what is her name? This is so
Katie
bad.
O'Brien.
Katie O'Brien came out of absolute nowhere. The background is some Mandalorian episode. And just absolutely crushed this role. I'm just
pun intended.
So, like,
very buff.
Pun intended, exactly. Just wonderful stuff. And then obviously Dave Franco playing his brother, and Ed Harris, just lovely, greasy. Again, we talked about it. We likened him to Hopper in Blue Velvet. I like that comparison. Maybe plus 20 years.
I
can't say enough nice things about it in a way that I feared we wouldn't have been able to otherwise. And isn't it crazy, by the way, that, like, this is a strike delay?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it feels perfect for this time. I just feel like sitting in the theater was great at this time of year. And yeah, I loved it. I mean, it's, I feel like it goes without saying, this is a lock for many Austin nominations. So if you have not seen this, I really implore you go out into a theater and see it. Really support this movie, because like, it's really fun. It's really cool. It's not for everybody, but if it's one of those movies that's perfect because it's not for everybody, but if it's for you, it's so fucking for you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that's what I think is beautiful about it, is like, it's not everyone's thing, but if it's your thing, it'll root deep how much it's your thing.
And also, no offense to the kids using the phrase Lynchian too much. It's okay.
It's okay. It's a, you know, it's a, yeah, it's a buzzword, but I think that definitely it's, you see it a lot here, which is great.
Kenzo, do you mind if I use this as a bridge to talk about another strike delay A24 release going to end up near the top of my best of list?
Please, because Ian and I were just talking about how we cannot find a freaking showing of this damn movie.
Yeah, it's because it's in New York and LA, and they're very slowly rolling it out. We're talking about Julio Torres's Problemista. This is the debut for writer-director Torres, who has an amazing HBO special. I was on Los Espookies, one of the great shows of the last few years. And it's just a really talented, fresh, comedic mind. So the movie follows him. He plays Alejandro. He's a toy designer from El Salvador who's trying to make it work in New York City. He's come into America and he has to find a visa. And so he ends up having to rely on this crazy character played by Tilda Swinton. Their dynamic is hilarious. The toys that he designs, if you've seen Julio Torres's act, they're from they feel like they could be right out of that act, in the way that like, I'm actually going to make a crazy comparison here.
Ooh.
A couple of years ago on the pod, we became infamous and we are still talked, like people still talk to us. I just got a DM on Instagram last week about this movie. A couple of years ago, we covered a movie starring the comedian Carrot Top called Chairman of the Board. Yes. And in a lot of ways, Problemista feels like the A, great version. It's a great movie is the difference. It's actually genuinely funny. But also it features stuff from Julio Torres's act that is like, it's a prop, but it's also very original and very funny and very fresh. He designs toys and plays around with figurines and stuff. It's hard to describe if you haven't seen it, but it's done very well in Problemista. I don't want to say much else about it because, again, it is a 98-minute comedy that you can't see yet because you do not live in New York or LA, and I'm sorry. But take this as my recommendation. Please go check it out.
That I have been dying to see this one since I first saw the trailer. It looks so fun. I didn't realize it was kind of, is it based off of Julio Torres's show that he does? Like, is it kind of like Dicks-esque, where it's like kind of a show that then was kind of crafted into a film, or?
Oh no, this was a film that happens to have some funny things that don't feel too foreign to his act.
Okay.
But well, and once you, and I'm talking around it because I really don't want to give, like, there aren't that many in the movie and I don't want to give it away.
Yeah, I love
that. There are like three maybe, and they're all really funny. And he's going out and doing press now with the stuff. So sorry in advance, I guess, when you see that stuff. But
I love it.
I was a big fan.
I'm so excited for Tilda. I love Tilda so much. Can the woman do a bad job in anything? She's so good.
Their chemistry, again, is like undeniable.
I love that.
Oh, okay. So I am looking now, and apparently it is why it will be releasing wide this weekend past. So you could have seen it already, listener. Maybe. I'm not your mom. I don't know what you do. But highly recommend it. People check it out. Make weekend two that much bigger. Spread the word.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I know. I was thinking about this because, God, I can't believe I'm invoking this. Their A24 is also releasing Civil War in about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah. And
did you see it's already on track to be like the biggest opening A24 has ever had? It's going to appeal to, I think, a lot of people who don't normally seek out A24 films. And, you know, I'm keeping an eye on the Love Lies Bleeding box office, and it's not doing too great. Problemista is neither, because it's not wide yet. But, like, you know, I don't think that these are both. I think it's interesting that there are these two kind of smaller, while Love Lies Bleeding feels big, and, you know, I'm sure Problemista did, but like smaller queer films that A24 is kind of releasing on top of each other, and then they're going to slam into Civil War. And I'm assuming business wise, they're hoping that like these two smaller films will kind of make their box office back up when Civil War starts making all the money. But Yeah, are you going to be seated for Civil War? I didn't say that earlier.
So
but
I do want to say I think the economics of this, even back when they were supposed to be released, I think the economics of this are, let's get as much money as possible out of like a limited, slow word of mouth release, and then probably mm-hmm. see some of that money later in video, maybe. Like, I feel like your Civil's War, right, are done to pay for your Love Lies Bleeding or your Problemista or your Dicks the Musical, stuff that is much less expensive or involved. Will I be seated for Civil War? Let me tell you something. Last year on Awesome Danger Podcast, we covered a movie called Southland Tales. And the vibe I'm getting, and that's one of my favorite movies. It's nuts if you haven't heard of it. Nuts. And the vibe I'm getting off of Civil War is that it is baby's first Southland Tales. It feels very reductive. Mm. But then Sims was kind of into it in the Atlantic.
High
in a
on
very
it,
good
yeah.
review. And it could be good. Will I be seated? Absolutely. I have to know. Listen, we get Southland Tales is like once in a director's lifetime. So I got to know if this is the breakdown or not.
The trailers are insufferable to me. I feel like it's a movie like this and like The Apprentice, like these movies in an election year, I just don't want them. I just do not want these types of movies in an election year personally. But I was so interested by the South by Southwest response, like seeing the massive positivity based on the impression I have been given from the trailer, I was very shocked by. But there's a reviewer I love. I always look for his reviews, Robert Daniels. He's wonderful. He's a great Letterboxd follow. Yep. He wrote a really interesting middling review on it, like a middle, like where he's like, I see why people are calling it a masterpiece, but also XYZ. And I think that review was really interesting to me to kind of contextualize, because I think a lot of people are on a festival high with it. It seems like it is big and loud and bold. And so people were just bowled over by the theater experience, which I understand. And Robert Daniels kind of acknowledges that while also saying he feels thematically it's hollow. And so obviously I'm not trying to be like, this is the objective truth because this one person I respect said it. But it's one of those where like, I don't really want to see it, but I feel like I have to go to make my own mind up because I feel like the conversation around this movie is going to be crazy.
Considering like people can't even read a tweet, the conversation around this movie, in my opinion, is going to be brainless, awful,
worst.
Not worth having. I have to be completely honest. Like I hate to be this
no,
guy.
No, I feel you. I feel you. It seems like it's like a movie that's going to bring divisiveness to the community for sure.
I am making a conscious effort in my life to never be this guy. However, Beetlejuice 2 comes around, gotta be this guy. Civil War discourse, even thinking about it, is like, I
might mute, like, just the word Civil War.
I know that I probably won't talk about it online. Like, will I even post a Letterboxd review of Civil War? That should be the question. Ooh. And I don't know.
If we see it, we should talk about it. Like, if we see it, we have actual opinions. We'll talk about it. I mean, it comes so soon. There's a ton of stuff coming. I also forgot to mention Monkey Man. Man, that's coming soon, too.
Monkey Man, gonna be good. Pumped. Gonna be fun.
So I feel like, it's funny, we're just talking about movies that have not come out yet. But it's kind of that exciting part in the new movie year where we're past Dumpuary, and now we're looking into the spring and summer of movies. And I'm just so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We don't even know about the movies that are coming in the festival cycle as well. Who knows? Who knows what's ready? Mm-mm. We have a Yorgos ready. He dumped that whatever Beetlejuice 2 on us last fall. And he has now returned. So hopefully that'll be great.
Yo, Long Legs? I'm not a horror movie person. What do you feel about Long Legs?
I think that they are doing the kind of marketing campaign
cool.
that tells me that the movie is not good. I do not think you go out of your way to do this marketing like that if the movie isn't like fine.
My face has just cracked. Oh my gosh.
I think it'll be fine.
The makeup on Cage is cool.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten that far. Like the marketing is so creepy that I've kind of stayed away, but it also is so distinctive, so great. I hope the movie's great. I hope it's great. But marketing campaigns like this, like that's so good. Like the movie can't be that good. Can't be that effective. Can it?
I don't know. Well, this was kind of a different weird what you've been watching. I didn't hate it at all. And like, fam, if you guys are excited about some 2024 films you have coming up, email us at awesomedangerpodcast@gmail.com. Genuinely, let us know what you're getting excited for so we can also get excited for it. Because while it feels like it's going to be a weird year of movies, I think it'll be a good one. We'll find the gems. We'll find them. Tell me.
Can I tell you, I was very surprised to see a giant standee for Luca Guadagnino's Challengers.
Ooh, yes, we haven't even mentioned Challengers.
It's got a giant Zendaya. I feel like moving for that and the Bike Riders, which features our boy Fade Rautha Elvis, Austin Butler. Fade Rautha Elvis pilot, Austin Butler. Those movies, the best thing that ever happened to them was moving, man. Let me tell you, they're going to make such a huge splash now. It's crazy. Same with the movies we talked about today.
Speaking of Austin's frontrunners, I feel like Fade Rautha, Dr. Evil Award. I'm feeling like Challengers, Randy Roundtable. We got to keep an eye out for these movies. I'm thinking 4D chess, okay? I'm always aware.
When is Mackenzie going to see Dune? We're running out of time.
I need to fucking see Dune. I know. I really need to get out and see it. I really do. I don't have any pep in my step over it. Part of me is just like, show it to get home, but then I know I'll regret it.
It is my Love Lies Bleeding. Whatever that means.
I will see it by the end of the year. That is a given. Okay. I just have to see if I can find some time to watch it in theaters.
Here's some context. Remember how you felt when Bound was announced as coming to the Criterion Collection this week?
Greatest day of my life, yes.
Yeah. That over the course of three, like the peak of your hype about that for three entire hours for me. To give you an idea of Dune.
Do you think a movie, because again, like Love Lies Bleeding feels like it's going to be my number one, maybe rivaled by TV Glow. Do you think Dune is going to be your number one at the end of the year? Do you think you can see anything beating it?
I don't know enough about the fall festival season to speculate on that. We may have a new Paul Schrader. This Yorgos, if he's back to contemporary stories or weird stories that aren't Poor Things, could be something.
I think it's an anthology, I was hearing.
Yeah. Who knows what that'll be? It's even though we're coming up on halfway through the year, it's too early to tell. I will say that nothing I see in the current like setup comes close. It is like with a bullet, might as well engrave it now. number one Dune with no movement planned. But who knows? Maybe Deadpool and Wolverine is really going to knock them dead.
Knowing Austin Nash, I could see Dune 2 being a front runner for Best Picture for us. Just knowing the tastes of the Nash, you know?
I mean, just see it. You'll see.
I got to get out. I'll do it.
This is only the beginning.
Well, speaking of only the beginning.
Whoop-dee news. What does it all mean, Basil?
Okay, it's time for Austin News. This is the segment every week where we go through the smashing, swinging news, baby, in the world of Austin Powers. And usually there's no news, but this week we have quite a story. I'm just going to read this from Yahoo Entertainment. This is Joyce Ang for Gold Derby.
Oh,
again,
shit.
These clickbait harvest sites, insane. The Amazing Race is Maya and Rohan explain their Austin Powers-esque fiasco and why they didn't back up.
What? Excuse me?
Maya and Rohan Modi, they wanted to go on The Amazing Race. They are on this current season. first of all, listen, we talked about this a little bit last week, but these content harvesting things like Yahoo and MSN really do kill an article. It's insane. So they are on The Amazing Race, and they had to do an Austin Powers. Their car got stuck sideways in a narrow blocked street, and they had to wedge it out. Here's a quote from Rohan. We didn't know they had that blockade down at the end of the street, and they were small, so you couldn't really see it until you got all the way down. Okay, I see. So they went down. They were going down a very small alleyway, and the other end of the alleyway was blocked. Now you may ask yourself, why didn't they back up?
Just back, yeah.
The street was really narrow and we were a little scared to back it up.
Oh, okay.
I am going now to look up this Amazing Race. We'll get to the... Here we go. Here's the video of it. And it's a 13-minute interview with no clip from the show.
Oh, great.
Great. And there's no... Okay, well, I'm sure it was really funny. You could imagine what it was like. They were in a small alleyway, and they had to do the Austin Powers thing with the truck. Very funny.
Love it.
That is the Austin news for the week. All right, it's time to go back now 20 years to Alexander Payne, Paul Giamatti, the Sandman, Thomas Hayden Church, and the gang of Sideways. The actor Jack Cole is getting married. Celebrate, his friend Miles, a wannabe author, divorcee, and middle school English teacher, is taking him on a road trip through wine country. Along the way, they meet Maya, a waitress Miles already knows, who is very clearly into him, and the free-spirited Stephanie, who immediately clicks with Jack. Jack lies almost immediately to the women, telling Maya that Miles is already being published and overstating his career to Stephanie. But it works for a while. Stephanie and Jack click right away, and while it takes Maya and Miles a while, because they are both kind of awkward, they warm up to each other, and all is well. However, after Miles and Maya finally sleep together, he accidentally, unintentionally reveals that Jack is getting married, and this whole thing is some extramarital affair nightmare. Despite Jack saying that he loves Stephanie and that whole thing, oh my god, what a nightmare. She dumps him, it's a mess. She's real mad. Stephanie is fuming pissed. It's not a great scene. Miles's literary agent finally answers his call to tell him that he's not getting published, leading to a temper tantrum and a wine tasting. It's a whole mess. Things are not good. And also, hey, Miles's ex-wife, as it turns out, has remarried, and Jack kept it from him, as well as the new husband coming to Jack's wedding. Just a bad scene. Just a bad scene. But eventually, through trials and tribulations that are quite unexpected, Jack goes back and gets married. Miles sees Victoria, meets the ex-wife, meets the new husband, learns she's pregnant in a heartbreaking moment, but then gets a call from Maya, and life is not so sideways after all. There's another one where the notes are like, kind of like, well, they see, but this one had like, ba ba ba, this then that, but this, which is what you want.
What? What is ba ba ba, this then that, but this?
This but that, this but that. What? They go up to wine country and they meet the women, but Jack lies, so they fall in love with the guys. However, the duplicity is revealed. And there's drama around the ex-wife, so they go back and have the wedding, and everything's okay, and she still loves him.
My jaw is dropped to the floor right now. I've never heard this.
This is story chart 101. This is how you tell a story.
I've never heard.
There was a young boy who lived on a farm, and he dreamed of being a space pilot like his father, who he had died. So, but the Empire comes there because there are robots. So the robots and the boy run away. And, but, so.
You just wrote a, oh my god, screenwriter Kev over here, what the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know, it's stuff, it's easy. Kenzo.
Yes.
You accidentally spoiled my history question, because we already know that I've seen this movie 20 years ago, way too young to see it on a library takeout moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you have never seen this movie.
I watched it 2 years ago,
That's right, you did see it 2 years ago. So we know your history already is the point. It's a long, been a long day for Kev.
It's all right.
Not a wine person, huh?
No, I mean, I'm not really a drinker. I was actually thinking through the like psychology of this today to be like, why? Because I drank a little bit in college, but not really much. Never had a lot of interest in it. Not saying anything about my mother, who I adore, but she drank a lot when I was younger. So maybe I just was like, I don't need that. I don't know. I'm very opposite of my mother. So maybe that's where part of that comes from. But yeah, never been a big drinker. I've always thought that like the day I get into wine is the day I'm like a real grown up, but that day has not come. We have found like one wine that kind of tastes good I get every week for Shabbat, and that's about it. That's all I know about wine. I get the Pinot Noir with the swirl on the front. That's all I know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much the same. My girlfriend is very much into it. And actually throughout the movie was like noting the wines.
Oh, that's fun.
Right. So like, for example, at the end when Miles drinks the Chateau Cheval Blanc, she was like, oh my God, like that's actually giant deal.
I love that. So I wonder, like, I think the movie is enjoyable even if you know nothing about wine, which is like the gamble of the movie, right? I'm assuming that was probably a conversation that came out when the movie came out, was like, you can even enjoy it without knowing a lot about wine. But I'm curious if you're like a big wine head that like, does more of it play to you, I guess, if you're really into wine?
I mean, if you're a big wine head, you already really resent this movie for like actually messing up Pinot Noir and Merlot sales. So infamously in the movie, Miles has a temper tantrum about drinking Merlot.
Yes.
And Merlot sales actually dipped, not like 2%, right? So a little bit. But then Pinot Noir like skyrocketed. And not for nothing, but these restaurants and places they go to are real.
Did you see what happened when the Pinot Noir skyrocketed, though?
What happened? Oh, well, the prices?
No, it was because it became so popular. And as he notes in the movie, they can really—they're really hard to grow, and they can only be grown in certain regions. Yes. So when the popularity skyrocketed, places in California started trying to grow Pinot, and it actually lowered the quality of Pinot as a wine type because there was a bunch of shitty Pinots going out of the world because they were just trying to quickly produce it to keep up with the demand after the film. So it actually literally changed the like quality of Pinot Noirs in the country, which wild impact. Yeah. 2004, right? I mean, I guess it would have happened in 2005 probably.
Still.
Yeah. Wild.
Even so, it's just wild. Also wild that like people took Miles's advice very seriously, considering he throws two major temper tantrums in the film and is pretty much just a big baby, to be frank.
He talks with a lot of conviction, maybe. I think that's where a lot of the humor is, right? Because I feel like Paul Giamatti is absolutely playing it funny. Like the whole, like he's like putting his nose fully into the line.
Oh my God.
We're
looking for color and clarity. Just get a sense of it, okay?
Okay.
Thick, thin, watery, syrupy. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, tip it. What you're doing here is checking for color density as it thins out towards the rim. That's going to tell you how old it is, among other things. It's usually more important with reds. Okay?
Okay. No.
Stick your nose in it. Don't be shy. Really get your nose right in there, really. Mm. A little citrus. Maybe some strawberry. Mm. Passion fruit.
Mm.
And... oh, there's just like the faintest sousson of like asparagus, and there's just a flutter of like a nutty Edam cheese.
Wow.
I'm wondering if we could steer into this part of the thing, because what stuck out to me was like, I was really stuck on the idea of movies that make you feel like an adult while you're watching them. Because I feel it for this film and for about Schmidt Payne's previous film. Honestly, all of his films, kind of, sort of. I feel this about Up in the Air, the Jason Reitman movie with George Clooney and Vera Farmiga as well. Like, they're movies that, like, you feel older watching them. Even when, like, this is, like, a charming indie comedy about wineheads.
It's interesting because it kind of reminds me of the feeling I was getting watching a bunch of Nicole Hofstetter recently. It's a movie for adults, and it's like, it's not anything fantastical. It's not a franchise. It's just adults talking to one another. And I think that's a type of movie that I think Up in the Air fits into, this fits into,
yes,
Enough Said fits into, right? All the Hofstetter kind of oeuvre. I don't think we see those as much anymore, at least not in this mainstream of a way. Cause I feel
no
like
way.
I said this last
no
week
way.
When I was younger, I remember seeing this poster everywhere. I remember all the adults in my life watching Sideways. I remember it got getting nominated for Oscars. And this just is not the type of movie you see at the Oscars anymore. You know what I mean?
The fact that I knew what this movie was as a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah,
exactly right. Like, same deal. Just nuts. And that's because that's what it was. Like, I don't know. I'm sure kids know the holdovers, but also kids these days, like, if I were 12 now, I'd be in my 19th hour watching fucking Hassan Piker play GTA 5 online or whatever it is
Beast.
Kids do. Yeah, I could be watching Mr. Beast give eyeballs away to Santa or whatever he does. I don't know. Like, I could be doing all these other things. I wouldn't be watching movies, probably.
Imagine... the monoculture that existed at the time where we as children knew what Sideways was. Like, just thinking through that.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, I did not have a lot of friends and, you know, whatever.
I hung
else.
Out with a lot of adults as an only child. So, yeah, I think that's another
reason
why.
I feel
why,
that. But also, it's interesting because the movie is about these seemingly you would imagine that somebody who likes wine as much as Miles and Jack profess to or claim to be mature and cultured, mm-hmm. and yet they act like blubbering children.
Yes.
In such a ridiculous way. Jack and his, but I don't wanna, his he's all id and all impulse. And Miles, Ebert put it really well in his review. Like, if you were to glue them together, they may form one complete person.
That is so interesting. I could hear you building to that. And I think that's such an interesting thought, because I agree. It's the id and the ego separated almost.
Yeah. But I just loved the way that that's done. And it was done also in a way that felt very compassionate to all four characters. I mean, Jack, not a lot of redeeming there. But the golden retriever of it also is very charming, and Hayden Church is very charismatic in the performance. And I do kind of wish that there was more done with that in the actual movie. I wish I didn't have to project my entire experience onto it. Am I just like saying stuff to fill time? Like, does that make sense? The idea that the movie is about adults who act like children?
Yeah, I think it totally is. I think that Giamatti and Thomas Hayden Church have really great chemistry. So I think that sells a lot of the movie. Like, they just have really great chemistry as friends. I don't know if I fully agree about each character kind of getting, their grace. Cause like, I mean, I just found Jack on the second watch to be just completely insufferable. And I know that's the point. I know he's not supposed to be sufferable, but like, he is like really unredeemingly so insufferable. And I kind of wished I wanted a little bit more to him. And the women felt, especially Sandro, felt like, I mean, completely underdeveloped. I think that for me, Maya had a bit more depth because, I mean, Virginia Madsen's incredible in this. And she at least gets, to me, the heart of the movie is that exchange with her and Giamatti on the back porch when she asks him why he loves Merlot and he asks why she loves wine. Like, I love that monologue from her. I feel like we get a little bit of depth from her there. And to me, that's the whole heart of the movie is that scene. It's my favorite scene in the film.
I mean, it's like a thing with you.
I don't know. It's a hard grape to grow, as you know, right? It's thin-skinned, temperamental, ripens early. It's, you know, it's not a survivor like Cabernet, which can just grow anywhere and thrive even when it's neglected. Nah, Pinot needs constant care and attention. You know, and in fact, it can only grow in these really specific little tucked away corners of the world. And only the most patient and nurturing of growers can do it, really.
Oh, I think I originally got into wine through my ex-husband. You know, he had this big sort of show-off cellar, you know?
Right.
But then I discovered that I had a really sharp palate. Mm-hmm. And the more I drank, the more I liked what it made me think about.
Like what?
Like what a fraud he was. Wow. No, I mean, I like to think about the life of wine.
But then, yeah, I wish I had a little bit more from Sandra Oh's character. I feel like she doesn't really get... maybe similarly to Thomas Hayden Church, you don't really get that I don't know, a conclusion, a finality you kind of want with her, because she just has way less development throughout the film, just generally.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's not.
But like she's not. I wrote Randy Roundtable obliterated.
Obliterado. Obliterado, my God. But it's also she's not amazing. Like Thomas Hayden Church. He has enough. He has character in that he is the reason the movie happens.
Yeah.
But it does not develop. He very much does not change. He is not punished for anything that happens and does not grow. That's the whole point. Is that right? Is that things will come and go and they'll happen to him. So I felt like Sandra was just a compliment to that. I agree with you in like the disappointment of the lack of depth, but I kind of expected it by that conversation. Cause it was like, okay, clearly they're mirrors of the man.
Well, yeah.
In some way.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Can I say my one kind of negative joke?
Let's hear it.
There was a part in the movie where the soundtrack was playing and I was like, why does this sound like 2004 Food Network music? Oh. And then and then it got to the part where it was the montage where it was like all the various camcorder shots and like in little boxes moving around the screen like it's an Ocean's movie or something. And yeah. I was like, why is this Food Network? This is 2003 Food Network designs. And it just made me laugh my ass off. Like the music with those visuals, I was like, am I watching the Barefoot Contessa? Like what's happening? It just made me laugh.
I get it. I like that bit. I thought that was interesting.
I but just I was like, this is Food Network, baby.
I just maybe that's why I didn't. And the wine review. Maybe that's why they don't do this anymore.
Who knows?
That was great. Well, it's good that that was the one negative. That seems like kind of a picky...
That's not my one negative. But it's just it was the joke thing I needed to make sure I said because that was what I thought of. But it's not my one negative. I do think, not to barely, I do think that this film is a film that I think I've always perceived as you connect to way more than me.
Yeah, you know, I feel grown up watching it. And also it's like the character Miles kind of speaks to me a bit. As Alexander Payne's failed adults often do. I hadn't seen it for 20 years and it's not perfect, but still really entertaining.
Where do you think it ranks for you with your Alexander Payne movies just generally?
Ooh, that's a toughie because again, like I wanted to watch About Schmidt, but I ran out of time and I haven't seen Downsizing. It's high. I mean, it's high. It's like 2 or 3. I don't even know what my number one is, to be honest. I screwed up. Like, the Moving Image did a whole retrospective, and I didn't go, and I feel stupid about it now because it would have been very helpful. But it's high. It's up there. But I love all of, like, again, Citizen Ruth, Election, Holdovers. Those are all five bang classics for me as far as I'm concerned. So it's tough, but it's up there. When are we doing Downsizing on this show?
What is this movie about? You were saying that a lot in the chat because you haven't seen it, and I've never heard of this movie. Do I need to look it up?
It's an Alexander Payne movie from 2016, 2017. It's 2017. It's Matt Damon, and it's a really weak, apparently, from what I understand, it's a really weak satire on kind of climate change and overpopulation of the world.
Oh, okay.
I think it's trying to be like a Truman Show kind of thoughtful, weird movie.
I'm reading the synopsis here on Letterboxd. It seems very strange.
It's not as beloved as his other stuff, so I haven't seen it, but it seems like a wild experiment. Seems fun. Downsizing,
The reviews for this are quite mean from my mutuals. Wow.
Wow.
Yes. Everyone has it at like 2.5 or 2. This is aggro against this movie. This is brutal. Anyway, I mean, I've really only ever seen Election, which we watched for the show, and obviously I saw Holdovers, but I watched it 2 years ago, and it definitely like read to me as a film. I told you in my further down the road tag, I was like, this seems like a movie that like when I'm feeling more midlife crisis-y, it will maybe affect me in a deeper way.
Mm-hmm. Kenzo, sometimes in life, you got to pop some corn. And I'm thinking like we're gonna get a lot out of the popcorn discussion, so if you would be so kind, please, let's see the corn.
I'm not drinking any fucking Merlot is obviously great. It's iconic. It's
classic.
It's a classic, very very funny line. It was when they all go back to Sandra Oh's apartment, I wrote, I cannot imagine hanging out with your friends, then loudly banging in another room with those friends still in the house. That is total insane behavior to me.
It's so rude. Isn't that so weird?
It's the rudest thing
weird?
In the world. I wouldn't feel cool if I was like hanging with friends. I went to another room and I knew they could hear me having sex. That would make, I mean, maybe some people, I'm sure some people are into that, but that would freak me out.
I have to say one of the worst called a close friend used to do that all the time. And it
Are you
sucked.
Fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
That's so rude and weird.
It was a rude behavior that kind of told the rest of the story. He's the kind of person who would laugh, who only really laughs when other people are uncomfortable or in pain. So where there's smoke,
red flag city.
That's a situation, how should I put this without seeming like a weird incel, Easy to sabotage situations like that, all I have to say.
Anyway. I wrote notes about how I loved that interaction I said earlier that I think is like the heart of the film. I will not lie. I mean, I understand that for the story to work in the way it does, Maya has to get mad at him. But I was kind of just like, he's not the one cheating and lying. I mean, I guess you could say he lied by omission, but like that wasn't his truth to tell. And I find Maya being that angry about it a little, like without even wanting to talk to him about it, I found a little unrealistic. I was like, girl, like he's not the one cheating. It's not his truth to tell Sandra Oh. Like it's so clearly all on Jack and she gets so mad at Pal. And I'm like, what do we do? Girl, what? Doesn't even talk to him. I just thought that was a weird story beat, but I understood why it needed to happen. But I was like, what's going on here?
It's a little clean.
The winery breakdown is great when he drinks the disgusting spit wine.
God, that's such a like a that's one of those moments. Payne has a ton of these in his films where they're just absolutely such human moments. Stuff that like you would dismiss it in another film because it sounds so silly, but you know that he's talking about something so primal, so deep. Like something happens and you're just so angry at the world and at yourself and just you don't know what else you can do. So you need to drink, but you can't. So you drink out of the spittoon. I love that, man. It's up there with like Anderson does it in Life Aquatic. I gushed about this on the Criterion Connection, but when Steve Zissou tries to process some very unexpected news, he goes and smokes a cigarette. David Bowie's Life on Mars. Very stylistic, but same kind of deal. And then there's a brief moment of it in Giamatti's face in The Holdovers, which got my vote for the Austin for Best Actor when he realizes that he has been invited to a party as a very lovely friend.
Mm.
It's a great through line of just like fuck moments. Just fuck.
I love it.
I love it. Yeah.
Sandra beating the shit out of him and running away on her motorcycle. I thought that made me laugh. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I hate the whole waitress sequence. That aggro sex scene is so
totally
off for the rest of the film for me. I don't find that. I feel like it is supposed to be comedic and I just don't find it funny. I find it so uncomfortable and weird. And that whole scene, it just feels so tonally, even when he walks in on Hayden Church going at it really aggressive, like those moments of like immense sex just feels so tonally strange in this movie for me.
I agree. I definitely agree with the Hayden Church thing. And then I had forgotten all about this earnest interlude in the end, like when the movie stops being Alexander Payne sideways and goes into earnest, goes to jail or whatever, and becomes like some shitty like 90s frat comedy for 2 minutes.
It's so weird.
Like, embarrassing and bad. And like, if that was in a movie today out of nowhere, it'd be like potentially movie ruining. And from any other director, I would have been like, this movie is ruined.
It's really fucking weird. It's not funny. I do not like it.
It's worth it. And then it's also like it's Miles really going out of his way to like once again please Jack, who doesn't deserve it, only for Jack to not get punished at all. Again, like I know that these are like the things that happen in life. It's actually quite realistic that Miles would be put in a position to go out of his way to bend over backwards for Jack because he needs to. And then Jack goes away and then is fine scot-free. That's just something that happens in life. But there had to have been a better way than of like explaining that Jack's impulses will be what they are forever and that Miles is stuck. Like the whole movie is kind of about, see, but like I wish the movie were more about this because then it would make a little bit more sense.
Mm-hmm.
I wish the movie more clearly about adults and arrested development. I wish it was more direct about that and landed a little cleaner at that. Mm. Because then this makes a little more sense, but ultimately the slapstick of it, excuse the disgusting puns that may be fluttering around your mind, listener. Not great.
The fucking this fully nude man, like we insane. I'm like, are we watching Superbad again? What's happening?
It's unnecessary.
Unnecessary. And then, the last thing I wrote was like, I like the ending. I like the drinking of the special wine because it's set up really well in the beginning. And you know, like you know, if you're not someone like Julia and you don't know the importance of that wine, you have Virginia Madsen in that earlier scene to kind of set up for you how special that wine is. And then the, you know, lack of festivity around the actual drinking of it into the kind of hopeful ending with Maya possibly being in his life. I think it's a sweet ending. I like the ending a lot.
I'll be honest, as usual, you picked up all my popcorn. I have the same three things written, handwritten, in my work notebook over and over again, and we've burned through all of them, except for these three numbers, which are bank account numbers, so I will not read them aloud.
Oh, please don't.
How about when Miles steals like $800, $900 from his mom or whatever that was?
Oh, yeah.
That was great. Again, that's what a kid does.
Yep, absolutely.
I won't tell you the source, but that's what kids do. I loved it. Kenzo, I am curious to hear if your rating has changed and any final thoughts you may have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think my rating has changed. I do think I'm still at 3 stars for this movie. If it's only because I find it to be an enjoyable watch, but ultimately not one that compels me or moves me as much as I would consider like a 4 or 5 star film to do. Cause like, I don't quite connect to, in, you know, either the characters, and there's, I don't super love the way it like looks. It doesn't really strike me visually in any way. And you know, the women have pretty much nothing to do. Like I wish there was sort of more character development across the board. I wish Thomas Hayden Church's character made a little bit more sense. Like, it's weird because I have these like nitpicky problems overall, but it is like an enjoyable movie to watch because, much like the Nicole Hofstetter films, which I've also pretty much given all 3 stars, while they're not movies that like blow me away, it does feel good to watch them, right? Because they do, yeah, I feel like movies for grown-ups. So it does feel kind of good to watch. It's weird. So I feel like it goes right down the middle for me right there with that 3 star. Three stars is good. It's a very good movie to me, but it's not one that I love, that connects with me deeply. What about you, Kev?
Well, let's take a look. Let's take a look at Letterboxd. Let's see what my current star rating is. Oh, I don't have one, but I had it at 4 stars. And I think I'm going to leave it there because truthfully, you know, these Alexander Payne movies, they really get me. They get me. And I'm learning what that means. Not loving what the impies of that, but that's a Kev issue, and Kev will take care of that on Kev's time. There are some glaring issues. Where are the women? Who are the women? I think there are a lot of themes left on the table.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is a 2-hour movie. You know what I mean? What's going on? So, I don't know. Maybe that stuff's in the book. Maybe it's in the sequels. Who could say? I certainly can't. But I'm at 4 stars. 4 sideways.
Hell yeah.
Ready to do the show?
Let's do our little show.
I love gold. So this was a big year. One of my first Oscar years. 2005 for the year 2004. Now, if you recall, the previous year was the Peter Jackson extravaganza we will one day cover on the show. Return of the King and the crowning of, like, thank you. Yes, we can all acknowledge that Lord of the Rings was a huge achievement. The Academy followed that up by awarding Million Dollar Baby, the Clint Eastwood, Hilary Swank boxing movie, Best Picture, which I actually haven't seen, but
I remember that being everywhere. I remember my mom being really into that movie.
Other Best Picture nominees, Sideways. That's why I brought it up. Ray, Finding Neverland, and The Aviator.
Whoa, that's a weird year.
Michael Mann listed as a producer on The Aviator, which makes total sense if you've seen that film. Sideways was nominated for 5 Academy Awards. Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor won for Best Adapted Screenplay. Payne was also nominated for Best Director. And Thomas Hayden Church and Virginia Madsen were nominated for their performances.
Hell yeah. Giamatti wasn't?
Paul Giamatti in leading.
Yeah, what the hell?
Which is bullshit. Jamie Foxx won for Ray, so maybe there was a feeling of like inevitability here. Let's read the nominees. Jamie Foxx for Ray. Don Cheadle for Hotel Rwanda, Leonardo DiCaprio for The Way of the Future, or The Aviator, John Depp for Finding Neverland, and Clint Eastwood. I didn't even realize he was in Million Dollar Baby, but there you go. What are some other notable nominees here that we like? Alan Alda in The Aviator for Best Supporting Actor, Insane. Of course, Morgan Freeman won that one, beat Thomas Hayden Church. Morgan Freeman for Million Dollar Baby. And Virginia Madsen lost to a performance I hope to one day impersonate on this show, Kate Blanchett's Katharine Hepburn impression from The Aviator.
Yeah, what are we fucking doing The Aviator? Wow.
What am I doing The Aviator, Howard?
Howard.
Howard, what are we going flying, Howard? I used to do that impression. These kids were 13 years old. They didn't know who the hell any of that even was. You're or the Aviator.
13-year-old of all time.
I still feel like the coolest 13-year-old of all time. Oh, boy. Here are some more awards. Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor won the BAFTA for Adapted Screenplay. At the Critics' Choice Awards, Sideways won Best Picture. Thomas Hayden Church and Madsen won for Supporting Actor and Actress, and the entire ensemble won. This is why we need an ensemble award, because I don't think I feel confident giving everybody separate awards, but I think that the symbiosis and the combo of this ensemble really makes the material sing.
I agree.
Kenzo's hometown, the Chicago Film Critics Association Awards, gave the movie Best Picture. It won 5 out of 5. Perfect score. All nominated awards. So that's Picture, Giamatti in Actor, Thomas Hayden Church in Supporting Actor, Madsen in Supporting Actress, and Best Screenplay. So Chicago, how do you like that? Similar picture in Dallas-Fort Worth. Giamatti, Hayden Church, and Madsen won. Payne and the film... and screenplay won. Best Picture and Director, of course, just nominated, did not win. The Golden Globes, they won Best Screenplay, but otherwise were... Oh, no, hang on. The movie won 2 Golden Globes, Best Screenplay, and Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical.
Oh, nice.
Or as we like to call it, second place. let's see. No Clatrudis Awards. Would have loved that.
Damn,
but okay.
Clatrude.
The New York Film Critics Circle, oof, oh my God, so right again. Best Film, Paul Giamatti, Best Actor. Virginia Madsen, Best Supporting Actress, Boom. Best Screenplay. Boom. Thomas Hayden Church was nominated, unfortunately, probably lost to Morgan Freeman or whatever. Sorry. the last awards I will call out snuck up on me at the last minute as I scrolled through IMDb. At the 2005 Clatrudis Awards, Paul Giamatti received his Best Actor nomination, did not win.
Oh,
screenplay
shit.
Was nominated and did not win. And Best Cast nominated, but unfortunately also lost.
Shit.
The good news, though, get this, Virginia Madsen.
Boom.
Nice job.
All right, Clatrudis.
Nice job. Can I just give a shout out? I just looked at the 2024 Clatrudis Awards. Fremont in Best Picture.
Whoa.
Okay. Criterion Channel favorite Godland in Best Cinematography. Aki Kaurismäki and Celine Song and Hosaku Koreeda in Best Director.
Shit, they changed their website.
They did? I'm on IMDb. That's wild news.
Oh,
yeah. Fire nominated for Best Movie.
Whoa. Yeah, I'm looking
Fremont,
at that now.
By the way, I messed up. Fremont is for the lead performance for Best Breakout, which is absolutely valid.
Wow, they have an award for buried treasure of like movies that snuck under people. I love that.
Let's put a pin in this and move on, if you don't mind, to the Alan Parsons Project. This is our, how should I even describe this? Quotational segment where we tie our movie of the week to the Austin Powers trilogy. I want to call out a couple of random names that sound familiar. Mike Soa in the editorial department, who will one day give us licorice pizza. Kenzo is so hyped to talk licorice pizza on the show. Frank Ada in the sound department, I know we've talked about before. Gary Price. Oh, the legend Gary Burritt in editorial. Oh my God, hell yeah. Jurassic Park, returning from the Minority Report episode. And of course, Ice Age Collision Course and Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip. Who could forget those films? We will one day cover them thanks to this man. Thank you. Lastly, I want to call out visual effects John Coates. Thanks to this man, we will one day cover Collateral Damage with Arnold. Of course, our buddy Brandon champing at the bit to come back for Collateral Damage. And Deep Blue Sea, which, by the way, is the one where Sam Jackson gets eaten by a giant shark.
Oh my gosh.
Or whatever. Yeah, it's awesome. There you are. You're over there.
We have no use over there, but if you would like to be over there, you can email us at austindangerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tag your reviews, Austin Danger Pod, Austin Danger Podcast. We'll find them. We'll like them. I'm trying to be better at the letterbox, y'all. I will pull some reviews for the next couple
of weeks. Yeah, please, people, make sure you're following the Austin Danger Podcast HQ, because like Kenzo, I too am trying to be better at the letterboxed. And I'm hoping that we can get some stuff up there for you guys to enjoy.
We're going to do it. It's going to be great. I did put some cool stories up about the Austin, so definitely check that out. But yeah, the best way to get a hold of us is austindangerpodcast@gmail.com. You heard last week a bunch of fun voicemails and letters, just like last week. We'll share them on the show, babes. We love you.
Mwah.
Mwah.
But now it is time for the end of our show. And with it, I would argue the most exciting moment of the whole show. We will learn what Mackenzie will spin for our April Fool's episode.
Oh, yeah. So I rolled on a sequel in a franchise we've not begun yet.
Oh, the journey begins.
New franchise. I'm scared. So we have to go back to the first, because I landed on the second in this franchise.
Oh, man. Predator, finally.
Do you want the, I think you'll get it if I read you the tagline on Letterboxd. You ready?
Give me the tagline. Go ahead.
Expect the impossible.
Is it that obvious?
I don't know. Is it?
We're beginning one of the longer, now we've got some crazy journeys on the list.
Mr. Brian De Palma directs.
Yeah. So this is actually a pretty long journey for us compared to some other stuff, but this is the beginning of a 7-movie journey on Austin Danger Podcast. Mackenzie, you want to give us the title of the movie?
I landed on the second in this franchise, so we have to go back to the first per our ADP rules. Yeah.
Thank God for the ADP rule, man.
So we will be watching Brian De Palma's 1996 Mission Impossible, which I have never seen. I've never seen a single Mission Impossible movie. I've always contemplated going on the journey as the new movie came out, and I never did. So this is my first time watching Mission Impossible.
I know what I am putting in the village as the teaser. Because I feel like that iconic image of Tom hanging from the ceiling.
Yes, I'll finally know the context now.
To A, and B, trying to keep your expectations in check. Kev, on Letterboxd, gave this movie 5 stars. So I don't know, but he gives 5 stars to everything. So who could say?
Yo, I have the highest of highs and the lowest of lows with Brian De Palma, because I've seen 3 of his films, 2 all-timers, Blowout and Phantom of the Paradise. And then infamously, we returned to him because of Black Dahlia. Remember when we did that?
Oh, well, that wasn't his fault. But yeah, I vividly remember seeing the good movie in there. Somewhere
that was an iconic AAP episode. Remember the Katie Lang lesbian bar in the Black Dahlia? Like, what the fuck are we doing here?
Oh, that was rad. One thing I will say about this is I love De Palma. I haven't seen that much more of his work than you. But I will say that this movie is very conventional mid-90s action thriller starring Tom Cruise. So it's fine. It's going to be great. You're going to love it.
Hell yeah.
Or the episode's going to be even better than it was going to be. Because if you hate it, man, this is going to have the juice. So, folks, next week on April Fool's Day, we will begin a new journey with Brian De Palma's Mission Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, hang out with us then. Check it out. Send email and voicemail to austindangerpodcast@gmail.com. I've been putting hints, giving away the next week's Austin movie in the VHS Village for 3 months. Have you noticed? Doesn't seem like people have. But until next week, from Mackenzie, this is Kev. Austin Danger Podcast, peace.
If you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Austin Danger Pod. This episode was mixed and edited by me, Mackenzie. Thanks for listening. I'm holding a pen like this, so I feel like a businesswoman, but it's not. It's just for my power. We love a pen.
We love a pen. Put this at the end. We love a pen. Listeners, I'm also holding a pen.
We're holding pens. I feel powerful.
Also, the thing broke on this one. So it's Signal. Fully sharp as fuck. And yet, nevertheless, I persist.
Zebra 0.7 millimeter. I love this fucking pen. Send us pens. No, I'm just kidding.